This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Lynn Neary in Washington. Neil Conan is on vacation. It's been 32 years since 18-year-olds got the right to vote. Since then, millions of young people have registered, but the number who actually turn out on Election Day has been declining since 1972, when half of all 18 to 24-year-olds voted. As the presidential election season gets underway, young people will be among the many groups the aspiring candidates will reach out to. But what issues will attract them? Do the 29-year-old Gen Xers share the same values as the 18-year-old new millennials? And are young people under 30 eager to get involved in the political process or apathetic and cynical about politics and politicians? Today, in the second part of our series on the upcoming presidential election, we'll be talking about young people and politics. We want to know what young people under the age of 30 are thinking. What issues do you care about? Do you vote? Why or why not? Do any of the current crop of presidential candidates address your concerns? Give us a call. The number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And the email address, TOTN@NPR.org. Joining us on the phone from Centerville, Virginia, is William Strauss, a generational historian and co-author of Millennials Rising, The Next Great Generation. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Lynn.
Now, in your book, you make a strong distinction between Gen Xers and Gen Yers and the new millennials, as you call them. What's the difference? Maybe you can sort out all these labels for us.
Generation X and Y really are part of one generation, which is best called Generation X. These are Americans born between 1961 and 1981 who came along at a time when adults were not focused as much on the child world. They were not treated as specially as millennials have since then. We see a breaking wave of a new attitude among young people for those born around 1982 and after, the ones who are now in college from their junior year on down.
And so how does that shape the differences as they now enter into adulthood?
One thing that we expect to see among these millennials is much more collective confidence, much more belief in the ability of institutions and themselves through teamwork to get things done. And that will translate into much more grassroots, hands-on political activism and behavior. There is nothing in history that says that young people should vote less than older people. Back in the 1930s, young people outvoted older people, and it was actually those young voters who then became the very heavy senior citizen voters of the 1970s and 80s. And we're expecting this historical cycle to continue. Millennials are going to vote in a much larger number than Generation Xers have.
All right, if we're talking about young people under 30, if we're using that as the category we're discussing today, then it seems to me you're saying it's a combination of Gen Xers, or maybe that sort of group that straddles the two, Gen Yers and the millennials. And if so, are we talking about a group that shares the same values with regards to politics?
Gen Xers have not perceived as a whole that politics and government will solve their most basic problems. They have been more on the outside, more cynical, more detached. But this new group of teenagers, the ones who are now flocking into America's campuses, are a very different kind of kid. They're a different attitude. They see themselves as very un-Gen X. I visited a number of high schools right after the year 2000 election while we were still going through all that recount, and again and again, I heard teenagers say that their generation was going to vote heavily. They would never allow anything like this to happen on their watch.
Now, can their values be described as conservative or liberal, or are they something else altogether?
It's actually a mix, Lynn. We find that if you were to characterize them as a whole, and there have been a number of surveys that have shown this, and college administrators vouch for this, they're more culturally conservative than young people used to be because they grew up during a time of a highly sexualized culture, of the full flowering of the consciousness revolution, if you will. And so they're representing a bit of a pullback there. But the flip side is they show every sign of being progressive or liberal on the fiscal side. They look like they're going to be more inclined to want to regulate behavior in order to achieve group purposes, to let large institutions solve some of the more vexing problems. I do think also that we're going to see a new class politics emerge from them, something that may bear a little bit in common with old-fashioned New Deal style liberalism.
And what about race? It's a very diverse generation. Might that ultimately change the politics of race?
Yes, absolutely. And one of the important aspects of millennials is that they are less immigrant. They are more of a second-generation immigrant group than Generation X, which was the largest immigrant group by far that was born in the 20th century. And one of the things we're seeing with millennials is the infusion of Asian and Latino cultural elements and values, that a lot of their approach to family life, to the culture, and to politics is showing strains of Asian and Latino influence beyond what we've seen before.
Young women are also very strong. What does that mean in terms of feminism and women's issues?
Well, I sometimes joke that there's a serious question about whether the millennial generation will ever produce a male U.S. president. You look at who all the high school and college government officials are, and they're disproportionately women. Back when boomers were in college, 55-57% of the college students were male. Now it's exactly the reverse. Colleges are heavily dominated by girls. And you look at newspapers and yearbooks and club life, student government in particular, and you're seeing a lot of assertion of girls. You're also seeing more cultural dominance by girls among millennials than we've seen in any generation in our living memory. So there's no question that that girls are going to be very confident. I think they're going to expect that things will work out for them. So feminism, as defined by boomers and Xers, is not going to apply in the same way.
Yeah. And you call this millennial, this rising millennial generation, the next great generation. That's quite a prediction.
Well, there's going to be a lot of history happening, of course, and how America shakes out following 9/11 and the couple of decades that we have upcoming, this OO decade and the teens decade to follow, we expect that there could well be a national service program that will coincide with the coming of age of a lot of these young people. They're very achievement-minded. They have a strong confidence in their ability to solve problems more than adults can. They see scientific problems, problems of politics and economics, and they think that they can fix things in ways that older generations can't. That's one of the reasons why we're expecting there to be large voters, not necessarily in 2004, but the 2008 and 12 elections are the ones to watch. They are going to be the next generation of civil servants. They are going to bring technology and a team attitude to these areas that will be beyond anything that we have recognized among young people in this country for a long time. And if you want to get a fix on them, it's best to look at the youth of the 1930s, which are the kids they most resemble.
Well, you know what, William Strauss? We're going to bring one of those young millennials, or I think he's kind of right on the cusp of this young millennial generation. We're going to bring him into the conversation now. His name is Rhett Morris. He's joining us from his home in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. He's 22 years old, and he's the executive director of Youth Elect, a nonprofit group that wants to increase political and civic participation among young people. He just graduated in May from Louisiana State University. Thanks for being with us, Rhett.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good. Now, you've been listening to William Morris's description of your age group. Do you agree with what he's saying?
Well, we kind of take a slightly different outlook on it. First of all, we do believe that there is a Gen Y generation. We obviously, generational history is kind of as much an art as it is a science, and we tend to go with the people who think that Gen Y goes from 1978 to 1995. So in some ways, Mr. Howe and I are kind of, we're talking about, Strauss and I, are talking about two different things. But I would say that...
Do you like the characteristics, though, he gives of the generation that I would say, let's concede there's a Generation Y that straddles Gen X and millennials, and you're among that group. You're in that group. What do you think of the way he's characterizing, in general, young people, let's say, in their 20s?
Oh, sure. In terms of young people being more optimistic and idealistic and really getting ready to believe in government and getting involved, I certainly do agree with his characterizations of that. I didn't hear what he thought about young people in the 2004 elections, though, and I'd be really interested in talking about that.
Okay, would you like to fill us in there, William Strauss?
Sure. Yes, I think that you're going to find that young people will probably vote in a way that will not be significantly different from older generations. This is a group that is more influenced by parental thinking than we've seen in the past. They get along with their parents better than in the past. And I don't expect we're going to see them break either Democrat or Republican this time. We'll probably see a slight uptick in the voting participation, but not a lot. And Red, I would like to say that what I'm describing are, on the whole, people who are younger than you, that people who are currently age 22 to 25 could be called Generation Y because they're transitional. But the millennial marks a real serious break from anything X. And one key characteristic of that is that overwhelmingly they dislike the term Gen Y.
Well, we've kind of seen some polls that would say a little bit different. And in terms of when we deal with them, that tends to be the name that they use. But getting away from names, I think that one of the things that we've kind of seen with Generation Y is that there is a significant break from the baby boom generation and the Gen X generation, and that Yers tend to approach politics differently. We've already kind of talked about ethnicity in terms of diversity, but also Yers come from a very diverse background in terms of their families. They're the generation that grew up with divorce. About one in five Yers was born to a parent who was not married. And there's also diversity in other ways, too, in terms of religion and especially lifestyle choices.
Now, Rhett, your generation, you are among the generation that's just getting out of college and
right.
taking your place in the work world, and perhaps for the first time confronting economic issues.
Mm-hmm.
How important are those to people your age in that sort of middle 20s range?
Sure. The two most important issues right now for young people are the economy and, I think, the war on terrorism. People who are graduating from college right now, I think 75% of college students don't expect to have a job when they graduate. The job market is as bad as it's ever been in the last 25 years. More people than ever are applying to grad schools and law schools just to have something to do or moving back in with their parents. So I think that for the 2004 election, Generation Y young people in their 20s are going to be paying a lot of attention to the economy. Because as much as people are talking about that we're having a recovery, it tends to be something of a jobless recovery. And people out there who are looking for new jobs are not finding new positions. And so young people, I think, are going to follow what the economy does. If the economy isn't going to be doing well, I think they're going to vote Democratic.
Now tell me what you're trying to do with this Youth Elect.
Right. Youth Elect is a nonpartisan, not-for-profit organization that works to get more young people involved in politics. And we take a two-pronged approach. The first thing that we do is we educate more young people on the benefits of political participation. We're writing a book called The Y Factor that's going to be out next summer. We're also having a conference this fall down here in Baton Rouge in October. The second thing we do is we work to increase opportunities for young people to get involved. One of the things we're doing is we're trying to get an endowment set up that would help fund or provide stipends for congressional internships or any other internships in Washington because so many students intern up in D.C., but only students kind of from upper-class backgrounds can afford it because almost all the positions are unpaid. So we work on those two fronts, trying to open up opportunities and increase young people's knowledge about the benefits of political participation.
And just briefly before the break, Rhett, there's also still a fair number of people of your age or in that 20s range who are pretty apathetic or disaffected from politics, too. Is that right?
I think yes, but it's a little bit exaggerated. Some of the statistics are kind of skewed, and I could go into that. But I think that since September 11th, if you look at polling and surveys, more young people than ever are paying attention to politics and current events and what's going on in the government because they realize that these decisions that are being made on the federal and even the state level really do have an effect on their everyday lives.
All right. We're going to keep talking about young people and politics when we return from the break. What issues do you care about? What candidates address your concerns? Call us at 800-989-TALK or send an email to totn@npr.org. I'm Lynn Neary. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Lynn Neary in Washington. We're talking about politics and youth. For the purposes of our discussion today, we're defining youth as people under 30. Do you vote? Why or why not? What issues are important to you? If you are under 30, give us a call at 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org, and we might let some of you who are over 30 call us as well. We'd like to hear what you have to think, what you have to say about this discussion. Our guests are William Strauss, co-author of Millennials Rising, The Next Great Generation, and Rhett Morris, Executive Director of Youth Elect. William and Rhett, before I let you both go, I want to read an email and I'd like you both to react to it. This comes from Fran at MIT. As a 26-year-old graduate student, I would say that my peers and I feel somewhat cynical about the current state of politics. We have spent time discussing the two-party system, particularly the apparent ineffectiveness of recent politicians to get anything important accomplished. We feel excited about the idea of the rise of other parties in the American political system. Do your guests anticipate a push from my generation in this direction? Let me ask you to take that first, Rhett.
Okay. I certainly think that what she's talking about was very apparent in 2000 with the rise of Ralph Nader and the Green Party. There have been a number of Green Party chapters that are springing up across campuses all over the nation. I think about 7 to 10 a week, last time I checked. And that's really getting a lot of traction. I think we also need to look out for General Wesley Clark. There's some talk about him maybe running as a third-party candidate. And I think that he's someone that could definitely appeal to young people on a number of different levels, though probably a different group of young people.
And just looking toward the future, even beyond these elections, I mean, do you think that we're looking for a different kind of political system than the two-party system for young? Are young people eager to see that?
Well, certainly young people are less partisan than any other age group in the country right now. And they don't have a lot of ideological affiliations. And what I think is very interesting about this generation, young people in their 20s, is they tend to think about politics differently than other generations. I think it's hard for baby boomers to understand us because the way that we approach things is different. For instance, young people might be very pro-gay rights and very, very concerned about the erosion of civil liberties since September 11th. But they're also more pro-life than most people and than the population as a whole. They're very concerned about the environment, but they're also very fiscally conservative. And basically what we found is that young people kind of have a different system of political thought that really emphasizes personal privacy and doesn't want to see a lot of government intrusion. And that can be very conservative if you're talking about something like gun control, and it can be very liberal if you're talking about gay rights.
Interesting.
So I think that, there could certainly be a chance for something like that to happen in the next 30 years.
William Strauss, what's your take on that question from our listener on the email? That is a push toward the rise of other parties.
I think that that does get into the Gen Y millennial point, in that the question that you had, as well as Rhett, both are reflecting a mindset that we see a lot among people in their early to middle 20s. There's something very different brewing that's hitting the lower classes in college right now and that is flooding high schools. It's much more of a team orientation, a belief in the power of civic institutions. It's more likely to move in mainstream political directions. The jury is very much out about whether they will lean Democrat or Republican. I think that there will be some leaders who will catch their fancy, and it could be from either party. I would agree with Rhett that they are not ideological at this point. They're much more concerned about results. But we're going to find that the young people who are now freshmen, sophomores in college, and especially in high school, that by the time they reach voting age, they will vote heavily, and they will be very, very unlike Generation X.
All right. Well, thanks to both of you for joining us today. William Strauss is co-author of Millennials Rising, The Next Generation, and Rhett Morris is executive director of Youth Elect. He spoke to us from Baton Rouge, Louisiana. We're going to bring in another view now. Excuse me. Joining us here in Studio 3A is Ted Halstead. He's president of the New America Foundation. That's a public policy organization here in Washington. He's also author of The Radical Center, The Future of American Politics. Thanks for being with us.
Pleasure to be here.
And you represent that over 30 age group, the Gen Xers. I'm just curious, first of all, to get your take on what you've been hearing on the show so far from William and Rhett.
Well, it's good to hear from both of them. Let me start with a couple areas of disagreement. William mentioned that young voters are likely to vote much like their parents, and I disagree. I think that the most interesting and significant fact that unifies all young voters is their rejection of the existing two-party system. If you look at party identification, never have we seen generations that are so keen to identify themselves as independents, meaning if you ask most under 30-year-olds, are you Democrat, Republican, or independent, the vast plurality, meaning well over 40%, self-identify as independents. A second thing that I would point out is that in talking about the political engagement of today's young adults, the under 30-year-olds, we have to distinguish between civic engagement and electoral engagement, mm-hmm. because most young adults, especially the millennials that William is talking about, tend to be very engaged when it comes to community volunteerism or what we could call non-standard political activities. Yet when it comes to voting, they're not that engaged at all. In fact, in the last in the midterm election, only 15% of 18 to 24-year-olds voted. So there's a big distinction here. It's not that they don't care about politics. It's that a lot of young people see that the most effective way to be politically influential is by circumventing the traditional political system. And that is because they don't think, and here's my basic point, they don't believe that most political leaders or either political party is addressing their core issues of concern. And although one can make a lot of the differences between the various generations of younger Americans, I tend to think that they have far more in common. They have a shared sense of problems and a shared sense that the political establishment is simply not addressing their core concerns.
So is the challenge then to find a way to get them, to move them out of the sort of, not out of, but concurrent with that impulse that gets them to do community service or volunteer work, to make them understand that that there's a way to take that another step into the political forum, or that should be done?
Well, it even goes further than that. If we look at the last elections from 92 onwards, we see that almost every time that a maverick, independent-minded candidate has entered the race, young people have come out in significant numbers. So there is proof of this idea that people will come out if they see a politician speaking to their issues. In 92, it was overwhelmingly Perot. He received a lot of support from young adults. Then, of course, we had that very interesting example in Minnesota with Governor Ventura, who was elected by young people, and nobody predicted it. The reason that he won is because of same-day voter registration laws in that state. Young people flocked to the polls. In the last presidential election, in the early parts when there were open primaries, we find that Senator John McCain had very strong support among young people. So one of the questions is, will there be a Perot/McCain-like figure in the 2004 election? But more importantly, will any of these politicians actually speak to the core concerns of today's young adults? And I want to make one more just quick point for our listeners, which is that there's a myth out there that when we talk about young adults, they're all college students. Both of our previous speakers were talking about sort of college juniors, sophomores, what have you. But there's a basic fact that about two-thirds of today's young adults will not receive a four-year college mm-hmm. education. So we shouldn't generalize and assume that everybody is like us and will have that four-year college education, and the choice will be, do you go to grad school or do you not? The choice for many will be how to make do in a very difficult economy. I agree with Rhett that these are some of the most difficult economic circumstances for young adults. In fact, in today's New York Times on the cover, there was an article about how teenagers are now facing the toughest employment or unemployment rates in 40 years.
We're talking about youth and politics on Talk of the Nation, and the number, if you'd like to join our discussion, 1-800-989-8255. Let's go to Michael in Boston. Hi, Michael.
Hello.
Go ahead.
I'm a volunteer for the John Kerry campaign. I'm 24 years old, and I guess I tend to agree with you, sir, just because most of my friends seem to consider me almost a sellout because it's John Kerry. He's one of the major party candidates, and I tend to think that there is a lot of apathy, and there is a lot of feeling that the major party candidates don't speak to young people. They don't care. They might try to cater to them a little during the election season, but they don't care about us. And
can I ask you what you're hearing from your friends when they you say they regard you as a sellout? I mean, can you expand on that for me a little bit more?
Well, you know, some people might be, say, Dean supporters, just because he's a little more of a radical kind of he's more exciting. He's more like a Ralph Nader, who most of my friends and the people that I know that are politically active at all, which is probably only about half of them, you know, they liked Nader. They liked the more extreme candidates that they just, as soon as someone is a Democrat or Republican, Al Gore, John Kerry, George W. Bush, whatever party, it's just they don't seem to trust them. And I think that's too bad. You know,
or let's see if we can get Ted Halstead to respond to your comment. And thanks so much for your call, Michael.
Yes, thanks.
First of all, Michael, I'm delighted that you're volunteering for the campaign. I think we need a lot more people doing that, and I don't see it as sellout at all. The fundamental paradox that young people face is that the only way to solve collective problems is through collective action. So if young people want to have an impact in the political process, they have no choice but to vote. And the more active young people become, the more we can get candidates to speak to our core issues. And if you go through the core issues, there are issues like education, like jobs and economic inequality, like the quality of our environment, like the lack of health care. I mean, if you look at today's young adults, never has there been a generation that is facing such difficult employment opportunities, that is facing such economic inequality, at least in recent decades, that cares so much about the environment but is seeing so little done on that front. And just to give you one more recent example, Congress is now, of course, debating whether to give prescription drugs to the elderly for about $40 billion a year. But young adults are the most uninsured of any population in America, and they have every right to ask, well, why aren't we doing something to solve the problem of the uninsured? Why aren't we doing something to solve global warming? Why aren't we speaking to the tax issues of young adults instead of the tax issues of the two established parties?
All right, let's take another call from Tara, and she's in, I believe it's Southampton, Pennsylvania. Hi, Tara.
Hello.
Go ahead.
I am a recent college graduate. I'm 22 years old, and I have a BA in English. I'm basically the only person I know that graduated from my school in my class that has a job. And, I mean, my health insurance coverage, I'm going to lose it for a month because it took me a little bit to find a job after I graduated. But I just wanted to say this is definitely the main issue for us politically, whether you're Republican, Democrat, or independent. I really feel like what I'm hearing from people my age is that, you know, we need to find jobs, and that's our first priority. And finally, I'd just like to say that regardless of how you vote, I mean, just I think that young people just need to keep their focus on the main, on their first priority, on their main priority, which should be finding a job. And no matter what candidate you go for, that's what you have to do. And I was
going to ask you, Tara, if you feel that, or if you and your friends feel that politics is the answer to your economic problems. I mean, does the answer lie in the political system for you?
I'm not sure. For me, I feel like I'm just going to stick with my party as far as I can and just hope that there's going to be a united front for the Democratic Party. But the last thing I'd like to say is I was put into a private school when I was 10 years old, and I was very fortunate to go to a small liberal arts college. And all my life I was told, you can do whatever you want to do. You can be whatever you want to be. And, you know, you're in the top 1% of the world. And in other countries, women can't even join the workforce, and you can do whatever you want to do. And now I've graduated college, and I found that the majority of my education, which has only taught me that I can do whatever I want to do, is false. I'm taking a data entry position from somebody that doesn't have a college degree. The person that doesn't have a college degree now has no job, now has nowhere to go, and I feel badly about that.
All right. Thanks so much for your call, Tara.
Thank you very much.
We're discussing youth and politics, and you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Let's take one more call. Fernando in Miami. Hi, Fernando.
Hello, folks. It's great to be on the air with you today.
Go ahead.
Well, the topic seems to be that I hear a lot from young people who are in college, graduating from college, and the issue is there is a very large percentage of people my age, 28 to 27, who are not in college, and we work, we're in the workforce, and our issues aren't being addressed, such as I have a child, issues about child care, insurance, and what about minimum wage? I mean, I'm sorry to say that I hear a lot about these people in college who are leaving and don't have jobs at the moment, and a lot of boo-hoo-hoo crying, but there's a very, very large percentage of people who grew lower middle class, who grew up in ghettos in large cities, and we don't have the opportunity, or we're saving up money to get the opportunity to get an education, and our issues aren't being addressed, or at least these political groups seem to be more ethnocentric, that it's more about rich white kids.
All right, Fernando, I'm going to let Ted Halston respond to your comment, because he raised that issue as well earlier. And thanks so much for your call, Fernando.
Thank you.
Fernando, thank you for reminding me of that point that I made, that that two-thirds of today's young adults will not have a four-year college education, and for them, the economic difficulties
Say two-thirds?
Two-thirds of today's young adults will not get a four-year college education, and too many of these conversations are skewed towards those who do. But both of our recent callers have talked about economic insecurity, the fear of losing health insurance, fear about, you know, the status of minimum wages. And I think if we want to talk about how to translate that into the political process and how a presidential candidate could make a real difference here, well, here are two key issues that a presidential candidate could run on and really appeal to young people. One is universal health insurance, not necessarily through a single payer system, but perhaps by making it mandatory and combining that with public subsidies for all Americans. The second issue is, you know, there's all this talk about tax reform, but all that they talk about, the two parties, is the income tax. What we need is a focus on the payroll tax, because for 90% of under 30-year-olds, a full 90%, the largest tax that they pay by far is the payroll tax. It's the most regressive, it's anti-work, and so forth. So if you want to appeal to young people, candidates should start talking about repealing or reducing the payroll tax and providing universal health insurance, two big issues that could really get at the insecurities of today's young adults.
What about, it's been mentioned, I think, only once so far on the show, and I just want you to address it, and that is the war on terror and the international situation and how that's playing into politics for young people today.
That's part of what makes young people so interesting in politics today, because what we find is that at least in the surveys that have been done on college campuses, the hawks considerably outnumber the doves. So as one of the callers said, some people think that Governor Dean appeals to young people because he's the most radical of the mainstream candidates. Well, yes, on some issues like gay rights, he does, and perhaps on health care. But his anti-war stance, while popular among the radical fringe of the young, is actually not popular amongst the majority. The majority of young adults were in favor of the Iraq War, but on the condition that it be done with our allies and with full UN backing. So these are not this is not a young anti-war generation. This is a hawkish internationalist generation, and that's why it's not easy to say who the John McCain or Ross Perot candidate will be in the 2004 election.
Well, thanks so much for being with us this afternoon, Ted. Ted Halstead is president of the New America Foundation and author of The Radical Center, The Future of American Politics. He joined me here in Studio 3A. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News.